muted yourself, Ethan Meyer.
No, I'm right here.
Say what you just said.
Okay. No, I'm right here.
Did you just say something?
No.
Okay. Okay. I think your view, seems borne out, is that the, there are two things. One is that, you know, for the first two cases where there's a discrepancy in the specificity, either Sfina Stam, Yain Zo, or the reverse. So the ability to fulfill your side of the bargain gives you a claim against the other fellow, meaning that, like, you're not holding things up, the other fellow was holding things up. Then we distinguish between the case where you're both specific and the case where neither of you is specific. In the case where you're both specific and the psak is Hamotzi Mechaber Lo Alav Araya, I think what you suggested was we should let the loss lie where it falls. And then for Yachloku, I said a shtickle taira about the Rambam and the Balei Tosfos and their machlokas with the Chachmei Sfarad about Yachloku. The idea is that, like, you know, both of you did rightly, in a sense, or could do rightly. You could both fulfill the conditions of the of your side of the contract. And, you know, it's analogous, the kind of ambiguous language of the Pisrei Choshen notwithstanding. It's analogous to Leika Lameika Malea Demilsa, meaning that, you know, everybody's done their job, and so everybody shares in the schiris. That was the
good. Yeah, very, very excellent.
Focus between Ritva and the Balei Tosfos about the half of the voyage that was already undertaken.
Okay, good. So Cole did excellent. Gave us an excellent summary right now. Yes, I think you're right. The main principle here is this idea that the person who is holding up the agreement is the one who's going to be saddled with the loss. And that's why in a case of Sfina Zu Yayin Stam, the Bala Yayin could always supply more Yayin, and it's the Bala Sfina who's holding things up. So, Im Nasan Amailo Yitol, he's entitled, the Bala Sfina is entitled, sorry, even if the Bal HaYayin prepaid, he's entitled to recover his payment because he has no obligation to pay when the Bala Sfina is holding things up. In the opposite case, Imlo Nasan Amailo Yitain, and the Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh, the Bal HaYayin is holding things up because the Sfina owner could always supply a replacement craft because it's Sfina Stam, in which case he's entitled to his pay, Im Nasan Amailo Yitain, because the Bal HaYayin is the one who's holding up the agreement. So that's the first principle that comes out of this Gemara. And then Cole's right to say that we have two variations of what happens when the parties are in equal footing. But this idea of Ika, of which party is holding things up, is the crucial idea that I want to take a closer look at today. Cole's also right to frame our discussion that this is going to depend. The important machlokas we've shown him here is this idea of Reb Nasan, Im Nasan Lo Yitol, or the significance of holding things up, is that with respect to even payment for the part of the journey that was not completed, or is the scope of the debate really about the part of the journey that was completed? Right. So when we talk about Im Nasan Lo Yitol, etc., is the discussion focusing on the unperformed part, so paying for the part of the journey that was not completed, or is it about paying for the part of the journey that was completed, even though the Bal HaYayin got no benefit from the service? That's the little bit of the discussion that we'll see today. And what I'm really interested in getting a handle on, which comes up in the discussion of the Rishonim in this context, is how this principle of Ayin Tesem et Aleph, which one is the ma'akev, which part the party who bears the loss is the party that's ma'akev performance, how does that principle cohere with the earlier principles that we've seen in our parak? Specifically this idea that you have to, Tosis's idea that you have to confer some sort of benefit in order to demand payment, the idea that the motzi, or the one with superior knowledge, is the one who is going to be saddled with the loss, those questions. Adam, you had a hand before, is that right?
Yeah. Just a quick question. In the case of Stam, what is the general assumption that we're making as to why the deal is being broken?
Yeah. So the idea is that both, really neither party, I think the Achaznish says this explicitly, we'll take a look at it a little later, really neither party wants to provide a replacement, right? Neither party is interested. The Bala Yayin doesn't have replacement Yayin, the Bala Sfina doesn't have a replacement Sfina. So the threat that, hey, I'm still able to perform is really just a legal kind of a threat. To say that both parties really could continue performance. So neither, strictly speaking, is holding it up.
So in terms of that threat, is that then making the assumption that the fact that there are more goods to ship over, or there are more boats, that's not specified in the contract?
Right.
It sort of exists outside the contract.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Okay, so the first sheet that I want to look at here is the Ritva Anayin Tasamid Aleph. He cites what he calls the Shita of Rashi, that the idea, the Shita of Rab Nasan, im Nasan es haschar, afilu kulo lo yitel, that this idea that when there's prepayment, you're stuck leaving the money where it is, that's true even for the part of the journey that was uncompleted. And he says that's implied from Rashi here. Also Rashi on Anamaisina Svinta, Rashi saw amayloyitem kol haschar. So the Gemara is talking about the schar for the entire journey. There's no distinction between the half that was completed and the half that was left uncomplete. Good. And Tosos points out here that Rashi seems to be assuming the ilu bischar chatzia derech shekvar halach pshita sheno sein lo. Tosa's understanding of Rashi is that, of course, the Bala Svina is entitled to be paid for the part of the journey that was completed. And Tosa says the analogous, and perhaps this is the source for Rashi, to the Sugim Bava Kama Kufte Zayin, of where you send the Shliach to bring the medicine to the Chola. Insofar as the Shliach completes the task, he delivered the medicine, even if it didn't confer any benefit on the Mishaleach or the Chola, still you got to pay for the job because the job was completed. So, at least the way Tosus understands Rashi, there's no dispute about the first part of the journey. That part was completed, you got to pay. And the dispute, the discussion in our sugya about prepayment or nasan lo yitel, etc., is about the second half of the journey. And that's the focus of the Gemara. Tosus himself doesn't like this. Tosus rejects this idea primarily because Tosos' doctrine that we saw earlier, that you're only entitled to be compensated for the performance of Chatzi Aderech if you conferred some benefit on the Balabayas. Remember Tosos' view that when the Chamor dies midway, it must be a case where you could either sell your wares midway through in Rhode Island, or in Cole's example, at the end of the Shire. Does that ring familiar, Cole? But if there was no benefit...
Not in the Bridge of Kazadu.
Exactly. If there was no benefit that was conferred altogether, you wouldn't have to pay for partial performance. That was Tosus' theory. And Tosus says, on that same position, it doesn't make sense to say in this sugya that everybody agrees there's a duty to pay for the first half of the journey that was completed. Tosus has a second reason for rejecting Rashi's theory, Rashi's interpretation, and this brings us much closer to what we want to discuss today. He says this thing in the bolded section. Anybody want to volunteer to take us through the bolded section? Anybody want to take us through that bolded section? Anybody get a chance to see it? This is really important for our purposes. Anyone? Don't everyone speak at the same time? Eitan, did you get a chance to see it in advance, or?
I don't, but I can read it if you want.
Sure. Take a stab at it.
You can say no.
Let's see. Let's see your Hebrew skills. Go for it.
Okay.
This is like a. This could be like a smicha faher.
Vod heyach amar Rav Natan im Natan lo skara shel chatzi aderech hanishar lo yito. Alo onus shavahu the balabais. Balasvina, the lo chave the chad minayhu,
Okay, good. So we give you an A for your Talmudic Aramaic reading skills. Now, for a reading comprehension, what's he saying?
I like that your hat's on forwards.
Listen, I haven't gotten a haircut since this started, so my hair is out of control.
Oh, so you forgot how to wear your hat. No, that makes sense. Sorry,
I got a lot of comments. You got a lot of comments in Sheer about growing my hair. So I'm trying to tame it a little bit.
All right, sorry, never mind.
That's okay.
Cole be in charge of giving out grades for hot culture. Hot culture? How do you pronounce it?
I don't know. You have to get in the ballpark tomorrow, otherwise I can't figure it.
Fine, he'll be at
horticulture, in this case, maybe.
Hot culture? No?
Alright, so it seems to, I guess from the first line, it is interesting, right, to throw in the idea about onus. I'm just looking at it, and again, I haven't prepared, which is on me, but looking at it, it would seem as though that, that there's, like, the contract agreed upon before the actual journey, trying to determine whether or not you could have factored in some sort of circumstance where this wouldn't have been finished.
Okay.
On the back end, trying to understand what exactly to do with that last payment.
Not sure I understood, but somebody want to help out Eitan? Help Yoni? Help him out?
Tosfot effectively is arguing that this sugya should be parallel to the sugyas we saw earlier with the fucking onus, sort of like article field and the Pauline can't do work. So just over there, we said that when neither party should have known, should have made it nice, so the responsibility or onus lies on the Pauline. So to here, the responsibility should rely on the Pauline, which in this case would be the Baal of Svina. So there's no way that the Baal of Svina should be able to get the full amount, not that he hasn't done work for.
Exactly. Exactly. Meaning, Tosus is asking, or Tosus is putting forth the argument that whatever conclusion gets spit out of the Gemara Nayin Tess has to fit with the principles that we saw earlier in the Perek. Earlier in the Perek, we saw that the loss gets put on the party who either had superior knowledge and therefore should have made a Tanai, or the Motzi. When they're in equipoise, we have to say equipoise because Adam's back. Adam, while you were gone, we, used a different way of saying things. So when the parties are in equipoise, the motzi loses. Over here, the Baal HaSvina is the motzi, right? He's the one who has to justify his compensation for being paid for not providing the service of getting this guy to his destination. Baal HaSvina is a motzi. Parties are in equipoise. The Baal HaSvina should lose. So Tosfos is saying, what? That is a reason for what?
Ismar, you're in the Ritva.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but he's citing Tosfos. That's the, I'm in the Ritva, but he's citing Tosfos here.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. Anybody wanna, so that's the reason that what? Yoni, what's that a reason for?
Sorry, I spaced out for a second. Read the question again. What's what a reason for?
The sugya on... You're too busy thinking about the four things Cole wants you to think about.
Well, we're thinking about that bright line of the Evanezo we'll get to.
Oh, yeah, okay, good. That is a reason. The sugya, the Motzi Mechaver El Varaya rule when the parties are in equipoise is a reason for what?
Oh, it's a reason, therefore, in this sugya as well, that Baal HaSvina shouldn't get compensated for the work he hasn't done.
Yeah. Tosus is saying that it must be, there must be some way of reconciling this sugya with that sugya. Rav Nosson says, Im Nosson lo scharo shel chatzi aderech hanishar lo yitol, why should he not be able to recover? Right? The motzi always loses. And the Baal HaSvina here is considered to be the motzi. So it wouldn't make sense to say that the Baal HaSvina should get paid for the entire service. He should be in the weaker position, okay, based off the earlier rule that the Motzi loses. Okay? So he says, therefore, that when we say imnasala, it must be that we're only talking about chatzi haderech she'avar. This discussion is only about payment for the partial service that was actually provided, not for the service that was unprovided. Okay. Now, Tosa says the following to reconcile the two sigyas based off his interpretation. Anybody want to take a stab at this? The Alpha Gav. Yoni, you were doing a good job, so why don't you continue? Yeah, so in a word, Yoni, how does Tosvos distinguish between the Motzmei Chaver of Araya, which party should have been Masna rule, and the rule of which party is Ma'akev?
It's only with regard to like the remaining schar.
Prospective and retrospective, right? Prospectively, yeah. The governing rule is which party is withholding performance, which party is ma'akev. So if there's a party that's ma'akev, let's make sure I got that right. No, sorry. Yeah, the ma'akev rule is retrospective, right? It's about whether you're entitled to not pay somebody for what they did. The rule of motzi mechavero olav araya pseida kisheshne manusim pseida de poalim, that's with respect to prospective payment for the work that was not yet done. So the rule is that the poalim lose with respect to work that's not yet completed. But if there's a party that's withholding performance, who's ma'akev, that's a reason for denying them payment on the part of the service that they actually provided. Does that make sense, guys?
Can you say the last part one more time?
Yeah, Zolt, you want to tell Adam the last point?
Sure. So anytime, if that work has already been completed, so the rule you use to assess if you have to pay is whether or not like whose party is the one who prevented you from doing the work, continuing doing the work. So if the Baal HaSvina said that, you know, I sold my boat, I can take another boat, then the Baal HaSvina gets paid. If it's neither party, then like that's what the whole segment we're doing now is about. If it's about the future payment for work that hasn't been done yet, so with regard to that payment, the rule is that whoever should have made the tnai, it's on them to take the responsibility, and if neither party could have made the tnai, then it's going to be the state of the poll anyways.
Right. So the crucial distinction is schar hayom hanishar, meaning the remainder of the day, prospectively, that's where the equipoise pseudo de polem rule comes into effect. But with respect to notan al masha asu, that's where the question of mima'akev rule comes into effect. Good? Does that sound good to everybody? Just a general way of distinguishing? Okay, excellent. Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz seems to say something similar. Eitan has a hand. Eitan, let's hear your hand.
I just had a quick question. Again, you might have addressed this, and I apologize for not being around more. But could you make a distinction between the cases? One, in terms of just regular, like the case we saw about the workers who placed their like objects in a person's like field or yard versus the case of a Svina because of the travel factor, and travel being a totally different type of.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, I don't know about the... Yeah, we'll see a few suggestions that distinguish between the cases rather than between the principles. Yeah, okay. So we'll see something. Not along the lines that you're distinguishing, but something that's, like, not so dissimilar. Yeah, good point. Yair.
Do you see any hint in the Ritva as to why this distinction works and why it's not the other way?
Yeah, anybody have thoughts on Yair's question? Why the Ritva's distinction should be compelling? The Tosis's distinction should be compelling to distinguish in this way? What do you guys think? Yoni?
I think it, like, kind of fits with, like, that's, like, in general also. Like, we saw, like, I think it's a very bottom line of the question of, like, if you get sick half or through the day, what happens then? So, like, the general principle seemed to be that you definitely get paid for the work they've done, and then the question becomes, what about the future work? And that was, like, the whole discussion. We saw, like, in the Rishonim about the future work, but, like, you know, the rest of the day that they can't accomplish because they're sick. And it seems that, therefore, like, the Ritva's distinction is that the future work is going to have this question of the Tznai, and if you should meet a Tznai, it's going to be always preceded of the Fallen, which kind of follows well, you know, tracks well with that idea. Regardless, like, the payment for the work that's already been done. So I think it works that, like, if neither party is responsible, then, like, they will still get paid in some way.
Yeah, another way of putting Yoni's point, Yoni telling me this is the same point, is that really the argument of Motzei Mechaver Olav Araya, the way I understand it is, look, you have to justify your being paid by doing something, right? No one gets paid for not doing anything. It's just like a good general rule. So that's all about prospective work. With respect to the work you didn't do, you're the motzi because you didn't complete anything yet. So you have to earn it. With respect to the work that you did do, you're not really the motzi because your work is what entitles you to do it. In order to disentitle somebody from completed work, like the chatzi aderech that was traversed, but you need a stronger argument than just, hey, you're the motzi. And the argument has to be you're actually withholding performance of the rest of the route. And that's a reason to disentitle you from the first part. Does that make sense, Yair?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, like, wee-wee. Look, the Zulf's the only one here who actually speaks French. This guy's got French Swiss blood in his veins.
Who is French Swiss blood?
Zolt, he's like from the French side of Switzerland, no? Yoni?
Are you from Montreux? I've always wanted to go to Montreux.
No, from Geneva, but it's not far. Okay. I want to go to Montreux specifically.
Montreux, you heard that? Everybody hear that? That.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's where the Sridé Aish, Nabokov, and Henry at the end of Hemingway's A Farewell to Arms went to hang out. It's like one of those. There you go. It's like one of those. It's one of those European. It's one of those, like, nice European cities on a lake where you can go and contemplate the mysteries of existence. In another life, I was an existentialist Central European intellectual. Okay.
I hope you said a Baruch Shapatarani when you got out of it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, I haven't been to Salzburg yet. Maybe I'll stay there. What I was going to say is, it's as good as any place to watch the dissipation of civilized life. What I was going to say is, I don't quite see in the ship case a reason to... Like, let me put it this way. Why would you distinguish between work performed and work not performed in the case of a donkey? Well, because the donkey got you halfway. So a sunk ship has not really got you halfway. It's, you're kind of back to where you started. So if what's the machayev for the first half? Is the machayev the hana? If it's the hana, then getting you back to where you started shouldn't be machayev you, because there was no hana. There was, you know, you took two steps forward, but you also took two steps back.
Right. I think the answer to your question, Cole. I like your question. I think the answer is that consider...
Tosfos go in a direction like this, but not this. They say, Tosfos has this comment where they're like, well, you can sell the donkey, you can't sell the ship. I think it goes deeper than that.
I think the answer is along the following lines. Consider the reason why the worker, the service provider, is considered to be the motzi with respect to the unfinished half. I think it's because of a general presumption that workers need to earn their pay, and they earn their pay by doing work. And granted that the Baal HaBayis here didn't receive any hana from the first half, by getting to the middle of the Atlantic where he's left drowning, but with respect to the reason for considering a worker the motzi, it's because there's a general presumption that he shouldn't be paid for non-performance. And here there was partial performance, even if there wasn't any benefit conferred on the Baal HaBayis. So to just put it, I think, a little more sharply, my answer to your question, Cole, is that with respect to defining somebody as a motzi, what matters is whether they were performance, not whether the benefit was received by the other end, by the other party. Looks like Cole froze, but... Right, it looks like Cole froze. Yeah. All right, so... Everybody else, does that sound like a good answer to Cole's question?
Yeah, I sort of have the same question as Cole. I don't fully buy the answer.
You don't fully buy the answer?
No, because in the other cases, we're able to make some type of argument that there was some type of unit of performance. So even if the medicines didn't have value, well, the unit of performance is delivering the medicine, not necessarily giving the actual value of curing the person. So to hear this, unit of performance is getting the wine to the other side. That's one unit.
Right,
well, now, if he sells the wine for something on the other side, it doesn't matter.
Well, that's what I'm questioning. I'm questioning when we consider somebody to be a motzi, is that because a general presumption that no one should be paid unless they confer a benefit, or it's that no one should be paid unless they did some work? I think it's that no one should be paid unless they did work, right?
It comes down to how you define work in this type of case.
Well,
if I put on my special work shoes in the morning, but I don't go out and do work, I put on the special shoes, it takes me extra time, do I get paid for that?
I mean, there might be a gray area, but I think there's much stronger reason to say that someone who does no work deserves to not be paid versus saying that someone who did all the work yet failed to confer the benefit deserves to not be paid. That's a distinction.
Is this really a case where work was done?
Yeah, the guy sailed. He sailed you halfway across the Atlantic.
Well, so let's just so. Well, he right. I wonder.
You also lost your wife. Now you're worse than you started.
I was gonna say, if I sail you halfway across the Atlantic, and then it's like the dumb blonde joke, you swim 90 feet to the shore, get tired, 90 out of 100 feet, and then you swim back because you're tired. I don't think that, okay, I don't know if dumb blonde jokes are current to the film world. Maybe that was offensive to people. I don't see why, simply getting you to the Atlantic Ocean, into the Atlantic Ocean is relevant. Like, you rented a ship to get you from point A to point B, and you're not even halfway there. You're not even halfway there. You're back where you started. So, I think there's a... I realize that I'm leaning on, an input-output distinction that, and definitely in Sefiras Poelim were, it's really the input that we, that we reward for workers. But whether the crops grow is not the workers' business. That's the field's business and the owner's business. But it could be that this is... maybe this is not analogous at all to a case of input-output. Maybe, renting the ship for the purpose and then not really getting towards the purpose is, you know, makes this an output, indicates that this is an output sensitive halacha, not an input sensitive.
Yeah, I'll say I don't want to perseverate on this point for too long, because I think you're both making interesting points about the input output Kablon versus Poel idea. I don't think it's very helpful for elucidating the principles that we're interested in analyzing here, right? So I think just to answer your objection, I think the best way to go about it is just to concede the point that the Poel is not considered to be a motzi with respect to work that he did. Now, it could be cool Rishonim who don't think along those lines are agreeing with your analysis.
Okay.
That's the Regel Achas answer. I said, Donnie, did you have something to say? You unmuted yourself for a second, and then if not, yeah, you're...
I was just going to say, isn't this exactly what the Ritva's desert case that we saw like a week or two ago? That it's you would never want to have gone there.
Yeah, well, did you benefit at all?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yair?
Yeah, I was mentioning, like, the Ritva, I think, is or maybe Joseph's, whoever, is, like, sensitive to this issue. He uses the phrase, like, for some reason, we're construing it as a case where Hana is possible. Like, I have a boat, I will ship wine. You always have a space on my boat for the wine jars. So whatever, like, Hana issue you have is somehow being mitigated by that underlined but not bolded section.
Right. I mean, you're saying that the Hana, it's still feasible for him to be Mahana, right? But for the fact that the client doesn't have wine.
Doesn't want to bring anymore.
Right. Right. But it's interesting, you could look at that two ways. You could say, "Oh, there's no longer any Hana to be conferred because it's at the bottom of the Atlantic, right?" But the Ritva,
that's why it's Yayin Sam.
Right, right. It's were you to have,
right?
Were you to have other wine, I'm available to be mashlim.
Yeah, you have a ticket. You can come to my boat and put something in the cargo hold, whatever you want.
Yeah,
that's not to you.
Yeah. Good. So Tosu Ben of Paris, I think, makes a similar distinction along those lines in our sugya over here. He says, B'yayin zev is fina stam monasan amai lo yitain. Right, this is an ikuv argument. Le'male hasfina sheli v'havei chamra. My boat is ready to go. Give me some wine. You bal hayayin, you're the one who's ma'ake performance. V'imkein tainas hamaskir, the sfina's owner, his taina is bria v'chazaka. V'chatzi haderech shehalach havalei lemesav. You got to pay for the route that was traversed because the bal hayayin is ma'akev. Just to Donnie, just to kind of get back to your point about the Ritva's earlier case with the desert, I think the distinction is that in that case, there's no one party that's clearly ma'akev, right? That's why if you left me off in the desert, it's, you know, I don't have to pay. But here, the whole point is that you, the client, are ma'akev by not being able to provide more yayin for me to transport. And that's why you forfeit that's why you have to pay me for the part that was performed. And then again, he distinguishes it from the earlier rule of the equipoise seder de poalim motz mechavero. Tenihi daminu leel kisheshneim anusim seder de bailim, meaning seder de poalim. Hainu davka leinyan shelo yitul kol hatschirus avu mimasha yasu mehen meha yitlu. So I think this is directly consistent with the Ritva. I do think this is a chiddush in that it limits that prince and same chiddush that we saw in the Ritva. It limits that idea of almi lahasnos as exclusively being a prospective rule about payment for work not completed. That's the ukimta that these Rishonim are making about the principle from Ayin Zayim, Seder DePoalim. Okay, good. That's one really important shita in the sugya. The second important shita that I want to take a look at comes up in Tosos on Ayin Tes Amud Aleph, the Rimaskel B'Tzvina Stam. Tosos says the following. He's discussing the case of Tzvina Stam Yayin Zeh, so the Bala Yayin is the clear Ma'akev. So therefore, even if he didn't yet pay, he has to fork over payment. right? Because he's the Ma'akev. And so Tosus says, Tosus explains, Afilu lo nasan, yesh lo lases kol aschirus. Even if he didn't pay, yet he has to pay the entire schar. Okay. Why? Why should he have to pay the entire schar? According to this view in Tosus here. Tosus gives us two reasons for why the Baal Hayayin should have to pay for a service that he didn't benefit from. And in this formulation, it sounds even for the Chatzi Aderech that wasn't performed at all, the second half of the journey. Two reasons. What does Tosus say? Moira Ibrahim say? Yakir, you wanna help us out?
Since he's very behoot, I guess it's included himself in the value once he rotates the boat. There's some type of hatkalah halacha.
Okay, Adam, say that. Let's flesh it out a little further. Why don't you read us this line in Tosos?
So, he was pulling out all the value of the work from Mishichat HaSocher at Asmina once he took the boat. He was in Zuman HaMaskil Lachim Tana of No, because at that point, now the renter of the boat is now capable of being Mekayim Kins Tana.
Yeah, it's actually a bit of a mystery what this last phrase is doing for Tosos, Kivin Shem Zuman HaMaskil Lachim Tana. But unless maybe some of you have an explanation for what that phrase is doing, maybe Adam implicitly was making a suggestion just now. But definitely the broad... Well, you were, right?
I was implicitly, yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting suggestion. Let's get to it in a second here. Let's just first just understand what Tosus is doing. In a word, what's Tosus' argument as to why the client here, the traveler, why does he get stuck with the bill for a service that wasn't completed?
Like closer to the
Baal Bayis,
so the onus is his loss.
Yeah, exactly, Gabe, right? Yeah, well put. Meaning, it's like there's a full sale of just, you know, like we always speak about that you buy a house, you're stuck with the onsen, right? Gabe's probably the only homeowner here in our group, right? So, you buy a house, you're stuck with the onus. So too, you buy this kind of ticket. You own some sort of right, let's say you own the contract in some way, and you're stuck with all the onsen, right? Shari kana hamaskir kol haschiros. Notice this is actually the first formulation, I think, tell me if you think I'm wrong, that we've seen, where a Rishon phrases this idea of contract as a property transfer, not inhering in a tangible asset. Like we saw the idea earlier, oh, that you're kone the guf ha-poel imlachto, right? You're kone the poel, you're kone the bias. Here, notice the phrase, shahare kana hamaskir kol haschiros, like you acquire the service, assuming that the object of schiros is the service, not the svina, and therefore you're stuck with the onus. Anybody have thoughts just on that formulation? But I think Gabe is definitely right about the principle that we view this contract as a full transfer of property right. Memela, the new owner, the traveler, is stuck with the onsen of his purchase. And then still, I guess, as what Adam was suggesting is that kivan shemizuman hamaskir l'kayim tano, the fact that you did this meshicha at a point when the Baal HaSfina was ready to go through with it then, right? At the outset, everything was good to go. That's a reason to view this as a fully mature sale and transfer of a normative right. Is that what you're suggesting, Adam?
The last phrase?
Yeah. Like since the service is ready to go.
It might my interpretation of the last reading is Mizuman in the sense that regardless of what happens in this book, he can still fulfill it.
Ah, meaning presently.
Presently, yeah. But in presently and in the future tense, and in any tense of the phrase, he is prepared to fulfill, you know, this contract.
Hmm.
He has many more books.
Right, I guess the question from... Okay, so well, let's hold off on this for a second. I'm not sure if this phrase is modifying or is supposed to be explaining why it's kone kol aschiros, or it's a separate consideration that even if you're kone kol aschiros, were one party not be mezuman to go through, you'd have some separate claim against him for the law, something like that. But let me get back to... Yeah, we have to take Gabe's hand, and then we'll take Yoni's hand. So, Gabe then Yoni.
Yeah, I just wanted to think through your Duke and the notion of Kenyan spheres, not Kenyan spina.
Yeah.
I guess I'm first interested in like the compatibility of the language Kenyan with spheres. Like, it seems like a mismatch of words. If you're thinking about something contractual, then it would be like you committed to the spheres, but the notion of Kenyan is the reason I went in the direction of some a more acquisitional read of Tosfos, and then I'm not sure how Kenyan of Spheres would explain, or focusing on the Kenyan of Spheres would explain why you're the one who receives the Onsen here is culpable for the Onsen. There are some pieces that don't add up there.
So maybe I think maybe we're not under. You want to just flesh out your question more precisely?
Sorry if that wasn't clear. Maybe specifically, why would we use the lesson of Kenyan when we talk about Kenyan has spheres? It seems to me that he really means Kenyan has spina, that spheres is really Kenyan in the spina, and I'm having trouble reading it any other way.
Okay, so let me just make two points. The first is that my reading of kana haschiros, meaning acquiring the job versus acquiring the asset, I wasn't intending to say that the Kenyan argument only makes sense on the assumption that it's a Kenyan haschiros as opposed to a Kenyan hasfina. I wasn't intending to make that diuk. I agree that maybe you could get to the same outcome either way, whether you view this as a Kenyan Aschiros or a Kenyan on the Sfina, either way you could get to the result that the owner is stuck with the Ones. The diak that I was making is just broader than our Sugya, not about loss allocation, but that even just in terms of like what do we view as being transferred through the Kenyans, through the Aschiros, like what does Aschiros transfer? I think the more standard view, as you're reading it, is that assets get transferred in halacha. Normative rights come along with assets. They can't be transferred independently, right? You could think it takes a certain kind of abstract thinking to talk about property transfers of just rights as opposed to property transfers of things. So Gabe, I think you're thinking in terms of things, and I'm just pointing out that the language of Tosos here doesn't seem to feel compelled to think in that concrete way. Tosos seems very comfortable talking about being kone aschiros as opposed to being kone asvina. With respect to your worry that is being kone aschiros sufficient for being stuck with the ones, I think absolutely. Why should we think that ones tracks ownership of assets, but not ownership of normative rights? So if I own my ticket on the plane, then I'm stuck with onsim that befall my ticket. In the same way that if I own the plane, I'd be stuck with onsim pertaining to the plane. Does that make sense to you, Gabe? Do you still have worries?
Yeah, that's a helpful clarification of where you're headed. I think I'm okay with that.
Say it one more time.
Okay, that's a helpful clarification. Thank you.
You said where I'm headed?
Oh, he agrees with you.
Yeah, that.
I thought that was like a way of saying it. Like, yeah, I could see how that could be made coherent, you know, if we finesse it enough. All right, Gabe.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt Yoni. Doesn't the language of Meshicha and Silchar to Spina by physicality?
No. I think I think that's just conflating what acts consummate the normative the transfer of the right with what entity is being transferred, right? So it's Meshichas HaSfina that executes the transfer of the ticket. In the same way that, you know, maybe Aschalas HaMalacha, whatever. But the point is that just because you're doing the Maisa Kinyan on the Sfina doesn't mean that the Sfina is the thing that you're acquiring. Does that help you, Ayer?
Maybe. I mean, it also doesn't say what the Sochar is acquiring. The Maskir acquired the Sfiras, whatever the Sfiras did. Maybe the money or the money per work unit, whatever.
The Sochar. The Sochar is acquiring the Sfiras.
No, Sharei Kana HaMaskir called the Sfiras. The Sochar does the Maisa Meshicha. I don't know what he's acquiring.
Wait, 1 second.
Yeah, Ichor, I think you're conflating the two, like, terms, Socher and Masker. I think you're confusing them. Yair is right that it sounds like the Masker, meaning the boat owner, has acquired the Schir, probably meaning, like, the wages, yeah, like the salary, the contract, if you will. He acquired that contract through the Socher having pushed the Sfina. So the Socher, therefore, has obligated himself to pay for the Maskir's accomplishment, you know, of the job.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. You're right that that's what he's referring to. So Kana HaMaskir Kol HaSchiras B'Meshichas HaSocher. Meshichas HaSocher is HaSvina. But the question is isn't the Socher acquiring something in exchange?
Yeah, like the right to use the boat, the same way when you were renting it.
So you think this, Kana HaMaskir Kol HaSchiras, literally just means the cash?
Or the contracts.
Yeah, so it's still a little unclear. The word Schiras is used, you know, 5 words earlier, and it means the cash. So.
Where is it used 5 words earlier?
Afilu Ratam Lo Yishlo Latte Kol HaSchiras, which means the cash.
Right.
In the contract, you like the full value of the contract.
It's interesting. So maybe you guys are right. Maybe my DX no good if you just want to say that Schiras here means the money. And then maybe there is, and maybe Eino Chanami Gabe is right that we could say that the thing that's being transferred is a property right in the Sfina. So maybe my DX no good after all. Shari Kana HaMaskir Kol HaSchiras. Just in exchange for the interim sale of the boat. So 1 second, let me just think about this for a moment. Yeah, I think you guys could be right. I need to think about this a little more, but I think you're right that maybe in this context it just means the money for the... And it's an open question still whether the thing that the socher gets in exchange is the property right of the boat or the more abstract entitlement to the... He purchases the ticket, right? There's just no way of nailing that down here in Tosos. All right, so much for that. But let me think about it a little more. Gabe, is that what you were getting at earlier?
In line with my reading from before.
Yeah. So let me read this one more time. Okay, so let's hold off on my second diak, but definitely the first point is right that Gabe made, that the party that's being stuck with the loss is the owner, And I guess let's leave it as an open question whether he's the owner of the boat or he's considered to be the owner of the schirus, meaning the job that is owed to him. Okay, Bastos' first day, and this is something we saw earlier in the year, that Onsen track the ownership, right? The party that's going to be saddled with a loss is the Bailim. We saw that, you know, for example, in the tshuva of the Rashba, that since Schirus is a Mechira Liyome, so the tenant, in the case of the tenant who died in the middle, the tenant is considered to have purchased the home, and therefore if he dies in the middle of the term, he still has to pay out for the rest of the term. We saw this also in the idea of Tosvos, that if Eved is Gufo Kanoi, that's the reason why the Bailim, why the Adon is stuck with the with sick pay, because he acquired him. Yoni, do you still have your hand up separately, or? Yeah. Okay, let me just get out the second daya, and then I'll take your point. Then Tosa seems to have a second daya to say that, hey, there's a separate reason why we would make the Baal HaYayin pay for the full journey, even, l'chora, if we don't view it as a full sale, right? Afilu below Meshicha, Kivan Shemaskir Yachal Lekayim Tno, Visocher Eno Yachal Lekayim, Imkein Mazolo Garam, Vahave Kechozerbo. So, the second daya seems to say that being the party who's preventing performance on its own is a sufficient reason for making you bear the loss, right? We don't need the idea that there was some sort of transfer of right ex ante to explain why the Baal HaYayin is stuck with the loss. It's not because he already transferred the payment through some normative transfer of a kinyan at the outset. Rather, this the mere fact of one party being ma'akev is reason for putting him with the bill. And he connects it to Imkein Mazalogaram Vahave Kechozerbo. Like, we actually view that party as breaching the contract simply because of the fact that he's the source of non-performance. Even though it's at no fault, it's no fault of his own. One interesting point I'll just make, it sounds like there's a nafkamina between these two deos and Tosos. It sounds like in the first dea, that what's underlying our sugya is a normative transfer of right, you'd have to pay kol haschiros because you transferred that ex ante through Mashiach Asfina. Whereas if the idea is that one party is considered to be chozerbo, then you would get some discount on the unperformed part. Yitein lo mechate derech shelo halach kepoel batel. Sounds like the poel batel discount only works within the second view, that it mazelo garam v'havik chozerbo. But if it's about this ex ante normative transfer of right, then you wouldn't get a deduction for the unperformed part. Okay, let's take Yoni's comment, then we'll take other comments.
Yeah, just two things. The first is, I agree with regard to the first line about the Kivach Mizum at the end of the first reasoning that Adam was talking about. I agree with, like, I think Adam is right, and I think the explanation is, like, fairly simple. It's just that, like, similar to renting, like, a, like, Toker and the Hamor for renting a donkey. So if the donkey gets sick, right, then if the owner of the donkey can provide a replacement, so then you still keep the original contract, so it prevails, and you keep with the new donkey that's replaced. But if the owner can't replace the donkey, so then the contract ends where it is, and you don't have to pay for the subsequent payments. So I think that line is just saying that this is only true as long as the master can still pay, fill his card with nine, and provide a boat. If he can't provide a boat, so then the right. Is over.
Right. But what's doing the substantive work in Tosus' first day is the idea that there was a hakna.
Yeah, I think it's just like a side point about like the way that Schirus works, which is that if there's like an onus and you can't replace the onus, so then you're not high for the renter is not high for the rest.
That sounds good to me.
The second question is it's slightly more technical, but the two Tosos, so is this one and the one right above it? Seem to like they've diametrically opposed approaches to the sugya, and I've never seen two Tosfos have very different views, and there's no, like, attributed author in any part of this Tosfos.
Right.
Very well, it's only at the end, though. So it's just, like, is this, like, my suggestion that Tosfos has, like, a larger view in this sugya that, like, I'm just not seeing, or if there's really two-dimensional views?
Yeah.
The nice thing about Tosfos is that the multiple authorship theory isn't heretical.
Right, but seeing them one after another seems a little bit much.
It's jarring. Yeah, it is a little jarring. I don't know.
Is it part of like the shock of the tardy of the Gemara you're going through? That like the first half there's like one Svara and another half the second Svara.
I'm not sure. I need to sort that out a little clearer for myself where I could give you an intelligent answer. But yes, I definitely agree with Aaron. We have to address it. Good. I want to draw your attention in this Tosos to how Tosos here addresses the prima facie inconsistency between ayin tes and ayin zayin. So ayin tes, right, that we're looking at right now, the Svina case, allocates the loss on the basis of who's ma'akev, which party is withholding performance. On ayin zayin, we allocate the loss based off the equipoise motzi mechavero olav haraya rule. So how does Tosfos navigate the two principles? We saw earlier in Tosfos Bina Peretz and the Ritva that one's prospective and one's retrospective. How does Tosfos navigate the evidence? V'kasha, d'ama yitein lo klal mechatzi adera shelo halach, afilu kepoel batel, kivan she'iru ones. Right? And we know from Ayin Zayin, hecha da socher anos da asa mitra de'in tzarech lashko, so da vab sheda de polim, umashma. We should say the same thing here. It's pseida for the motzi. That's the balasvina. Right. So why should you give him anything for that part of the journey? And notice this is where Tosos suggests what Yoni was getting at. Oh, maybe that's a reason to limit the payments to the first half of the journey. But he doesn't like that. But what's important here for our purposes is this answer that he quotes B'Shem the Rivan to navigate the two different principles. What's the Rivan's answer?
There's a fundamental difference between the losses that that the Poel versus the Balasvina are accruing.
Yeah, exactly, Donnie. This is a really cryptic answer, right? Whether we apply the equipoise motzi mechaver olav haraya rule or the mima akev rule will depend on what kind of loss the motzi is suffering. In the Skiras Poelim case in Ayin Zayin, he says the Poelim aren't suffering any loss because of the ones. They're simply being nisbatel, right? They're being rendered idle. Whereas in the Ayin Tes case of the Svina, the Baal HaSvina, who's the Motzi, suffers the loss of his asset, the boat. And that's a reason why we don't say Motzi Mechaver Olav Haraya automatically loses, but it's going to depend on this more complicated consideration of who's ma'akev. Does everybody, before we try to figure out why that answer makes sense, does everybody just see, understand that's what Tosfos is getting at? So, Tir Tzivan, Dila'el, Shapolim lo ibdu klum, Rakshen is batlu, Ein nosin lehem klum. Aval hachasha maskir hifsid svinaso, Kepoel batel mia isle, Kivan shemiz zuman lekayim tano. The question is, what's the difference? So, I mean, there are a few questions here. One of them is, you know, this is a recurring question that we have in our sugyas, like a minyas harevach versus hefsid. Are they really so distinguishable? This idea that being batel versus losing. But even if we get over that, and maybe that's not so difficult to hurdle to surmount, why should this distinction between bittel and hefsid determine which rule gets applied? maybe before we answer that question, let's just look at another application, another Rishon who uses that same distinction. So you can see the Mordechai here in Remez Shin Mem Hei. There's a Mordechai that we've seen already a few times. This is the Merami Rutenberg's tshuva about Leah the tenant who dies in the middle of the term. And the question is whether the state has to pay out the rest of the term. And he said, remember the Maram's position is that the estate does not have to pay because of the rule of Ayin Zayin. You hire workers and the parties are in equipoise. The Poalim lose because they're the Motzi. So too over here, the Baal HaBayis lose, literally the Baal HaBayis, meaning the owner of the house, who's analogous to the Poalim because he's the Motzi, he loses because he has to justify his entitlement to being paid rent without providing the service to the dead person, right? So the Baal HaBayis in this case loses because he's the Motzi. So you see the what's interesting here is that the Mordechai, the Maram explicitly applies the superior knowledge, Motzi equipoise rule to a case of Schiras Batim, right? So it's not limited to Schiras Poalim. And then he asks, he says, well, what about the rule about the party that's preventing performance, right? What about the Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh rule that the Bala Yayin loses because he's the one who's preventing the completion of the agreement? And so he says, no, that rule doesn't get applied to our case because Shaini Hasam Shagam Bal HaSfina Shehifsid Sfinaso. Shagam Bal HaSfina Avad Shehifsid Sfinaso. Avagabe Polim Delo Hifsidu Klum Elishem Izbatlim Kivan De Bala Bayis Anush Lo Yitem Lohem Klum Hachanami Misa. So what he's thinking is that the distinction between the rules turns on whether it's a case of bitul mimalacha or hefsid. The case of the property rental is a case where the Baal HaBayis is simply batel, right? The Baal HaBayis is, I guess, just going to be losing income. He's not having an asset taken away from him. And that's why we apply the rule of Motzi Mechavero of Haraya, not the rule of Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh. So that's just directly along the lines of Tosvos, but with an interesting application to Schiras Batim. So how do we understand this this rule? And maybe I should just point out before we take suggestions, the Evan HaAzel in Schiras Perikei Lach Aleph, he thinks there's no logic that could defend it. He says, Uvisvara vaday mashma de mablikach sha maskir hifsid svinaso. Atu midine yosher vitov aminon habedina kai rinon. I think, well, we're dealing with some sort of asisa vayosher vatov here that because the Bala Svina lost his asset that we should, give him a little compensation on the side for something that he doesn't deserve. It's just, it's hard to connect the dots while losing the asset should explain why the Baal HaBayis, or in the case of Schiras Batim, or the Baal HaSfina should suddenly be entitled to compensation. Yoni, that's the formulation you liked?
Yeah, you should say that more in some of the Dionym cases.
Yeah.
Like appealing to moral grounds to, to be given money for something.
Atu medine yosher v'tov arminan? Habedina ka'irinam, right? It's like which parsha are we in? So what do you think? A of the Rav Isser Zalman's objection, and I guess what the underlying theory itself would be.
But I was thinking I might just say in economics, it's one of these dinim. We haven't seen so many this year, but one of these dinim that seems to have a purely economic, economic motive about allocating losses in a way that's, useful for as many people as possible. And the Pole loses his property. It's nice to give him a little something.
Yeah, I think that's like a nice, it's a nice economic suggestion, right? Yeah, I guess in terms of the moral rules, it's hard to see why one should bear on the other. But if we're thinking in terms of, refilling people's pockets, it's just seems right that if the poor guy suffered the loss of his asset, we should try to remunerate him in some way. I think that's a very nice suggestion, Yair. What do you guys think for Yair's suggestion? I mean, and then I think you could deny the Yosher Vitov versus Din distinction and say, you know, this is not just chesed, but, you know, sometimes the rules, the laws of loss allocation will factor in loss spreading. Remember, if you saw in our Bava Kamma year, we like, so one theory of like compensation for torts is to spread the losses as much as you can. And it's just a kind of loss spreading that, yeah, if there's a one part, if this party suffers a loss, then he'll get some compensation that he would otherwise not be morally entitled to collect for. What do you guys think? So we have the Zolt.
Yeah, I like that theory. I kind of have like two, well, it kind of like knockoff of that theories, I guess. So like neither of them are like amazing, but I think they complement in some ways the larger theory. One of which would be that we I mean, it's like a general principle, maybe like emotion mechaver l'varaya, that we only say emotion mechaver when there really isn't a loss to one other party. But if there's been some type of real loss to a party, so at that point, emotion mechaver doesn't really apply in the same way. Maybe because of his economic theory, maybe because like his Zekin rules will apply more.
And just you're suggesting to work off Yair's idea that maybe there's a closer connection between how Hefsid interacts with the Hagdara of Motzi.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's interesting, yeah. It's an interesting point. You're saying that if like within the contractual agreement there's some sort of Hefsid, so then all things considered, right, there's less of a reason to view him as a motzi, given the net loss or something like that. Is that your point,
yeah,
Yoni?
Or maybe that we can't rely on a motzi mechaber simply in these situations.
Yeah, I need to think about that. It's like, yeah, it's one of those things that it rings like it should have some like a good application. So we should keep our eyes open for that idea and to further. Yeah, I like it. I like the suggestion.
Yeah, another possibility I was thinking is that we had this discussion a little bit earlier in the year. Like I think the Maharam has this about like whether Koalim or like a Batel like that real Hefsid or not, and then it was like Dine Degami. We saw like the Ksum quotes it, we saw like earlier in the year.
Yes, so, is Sogar.
And under that type of model, I think you can make an argument that like Dine Degami type things are relevant only when there's like real considered loss. So I guess Paul Batel, the argument is it's not really much of a loss, but if the guy loses his vote, so at that point there really is a serious loss, so we're going to have, you know, more Dine Degarmi rules are going to apply, so we're going to use more of like a year's economic theory in those situations.
I think the question, though, is are these rules Garmi? So I guess that would work nicely if the principles here are like real Nezikin rules.
Well, I wouldn't say it's strictly Nezikin, because obviously the wine owner didn't damage the vote.
Right.
So there's no claims on that ground. I just mean more in terms of we're talking about Nezikin damages from the economic theory of everything equal. I think there is like some precedent for arguing that the quality not working is not really considered to be much of a loss in terms of how we would, you know, divvy up, you know, the economic responsibilities while losing a vote, that is a real economic loss, which would therefore give you greater.
Right, so Yoni, I think the second point that you're making is taking a stance on the Bittel versus Hefsid, on the coherence of the Bittel versus Hefsid distinction.
Yeah.
Right, that's really what it's weighing in on.
Otherwise, I think the question to be asked is... Even
as opposed to why we would align one up with the other. Right, so... I mean, I think your first point was about why Hefsid should undermine the Motzi Mechaver El Haraya rule. Your second point, I think, is just about the tenability of distinguishing between Hefsid versus Bittel in this context, but not specifically why one rule should align with Hefsid as opposed to Bittel.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the second reasoning, the question is kind of why, according to your theory of economic, you know, quality of or basically it's good, you know, totalitarian economic theory. Why shouldn't the toiling be compensated for their loss of work day?
Yeah. Yeah. Good.
I think you kind of have to resolve, like, you have to answer with kind of like similar to what I was pointing at.
Yeah. Good point. Let me just make, let's get one last point in here. So far we have two real theories about how to distinguish between the two rules. We have the Ritva's and Tosabrina Peretz's distinction between the prospective and retrospective. And now we have the Rivan cited in Tosas's distinction to distinguish between Hafsid versus Bittel. So we have Yakir. So, Yakir.
Yeah, I think we had a better formulation than I'm about to say now when Gabe and I were learning, so maybe Gabe will help me out of it here. The other direction to go on this so-so line is that it's about somehow because the Balasvina puts himself out more on the line, that creates more of a kinyan, or something like that.
I mean, like greater risk, greater, it's not saying... But the problem is he putting himself more out on the line initially, or this, like, he didn't initially put himself out for more, like, when they entered into the agreement. It's just that he ends up with a greater loss, having had his boat sunk.
Right. But with respect to this onus, if there's some sort of implicit, if you're looking at implicit assumptions of risk or something...
You're saying a way of reading this into the, like, an implicit understanding of the original agreement, right? You know, there's this.
Maybe I don't know. I'm hoping Gabe can help me out. I think we had a better suggestion when we were learning, but I don't remember exactly what it was.
Gabe,
I'm in the same boat. I remember us having like a much clearer reading of this discussion, but I can't. Right now.
Oh, how convenient for the two of you, you know, dangle out the better formulation that you had, but no one could retrieve it from their memory, you know? All right, well...
It just means we're so far ahead in the chorus.
this is so long ago, pre-Shavuos. Fair point. Well, you guys should... we're back on tomorrow, so you guys should have that formulation at the ready, tomorrow. Let's get one more distinction out there. That's the Ibn Azel's own distinction to explain when you apply the Moti Mechavero Ekopoise rule and when you apply the Mima Akev rule. So he suggests, and this I think is what Eitan, who left us a long time ago, he was gesturing at something along these lines. He suggests the following in Rav Zalman. He says, "Nira de lo dami klal hachdina de sfina stam v'yayin ze l'din balabayish yasachar poalim." Can compare them. Okay, so the ayin zayin case and the ayin test case are different. De schiros sfina have a kinyan lizman haschiros shekana bekinyan schiros emeshichas hasfina. So he wants to say that renting the boat is like a property transfer. Okay? Shekana bekinyan schiros. And I'm just not sure. Yeah, v'chein socher behema umashcha, kana osa lizman haschiros. I think here he's definitely thinking in Gabe's terms of like acquiring the asset, right? When it comes to schiros metaltalin, so you're acquiring the thing for a certain amount of time, okay? Then he's like, not sure. Well, you know, if the animal dies, why shouldn't the acquirer always be liable? So he backpedals and says, "Aval socher lo kana el lezesha yishtamesh bedavar hasachur." You know, so he wants to say you don't really acquire the asset; you acquire like the use rights of the asset. Like that incident of ownership you acquire with respect to the asset. And therefore, he says, when it comes to Sfina Stam and Yayin Zeh, that the Meshichas Hasvina Nischaye Bidme Tashmish Sel Shel Svina Stam Lo Ichbis Lan Mada Socher Hu Anos Dichvar Kana Vinischaye Bidme Haschiro Sel Ofen Sheyishtamish. Okay, so he's thinking that in the Svina case, there's a real property transfer, which suggests that the Baal Hasvina should, which suggests that the passenger should be stuck with the loss, right? If there's a property transfer from the Baal Hasvina to the traveler, then the traveler should get stuck with the loss, because that property transfer is going to override the default rule of the Baal Hasvina being the Motzi Mechavero, who has to justify his compensation. Aval b'socher poel, anayin zayin, lo kana guf ha-poel, afilu begeder kinyan schiros. So how do you understand his distinction? Anybody want to take a venture or guess here?
Sounds like Sphiris Metaltalin just works fundamentally differently from Sphiris Hapoel.
How so, Cole?
He uses the Lashon of a Kinyan Guf. You know, I assume that the way that manifests is like, you know, greater, you know, the greater liability for Anus if you have a Kinyan Guf. That would be the relevant point here. Just like the more you're not, Schiris is ambiguous, the more it's like you're like a temporary owner of the object and you just have to return it, as opposed to receiving a service in return for payment. That's
yes.
Ambiguous, but that's the intuition.
Exactly. The intuition that he's pumping is that when it comes to Schiras Metaltalin, there could be a real property transfer. When it comes to Schiras Polim, all there is payment for a service. There's no ex ante transfer. Now, he obviously gets into some trouble here, because it's not obvious that Schiras Polim works that way, right? I mean, what about Gufo Kanoi? What about Kinnas Chalas HaMalacha? So he finesses all these things. See, we have a... Okay, Cole, your comment's funny. He is pumping intuitions.
I just said what I said.
Okay.
I issue no further comment.
So the intuition here... But he gets himself into trouble because he says that, yes, Haschalas HaMalacha is a Kenyan on Tzchiras Polim, but it's not a real property transfer. Right? So even the Kinyan Haschalas HaMalacha is not like a real transfer of a property right. It's just a Kinyan, like that each party will uphold their side of the bargain. Aval al kol panim lo kana beguf hapoel shum Kinyan. He's saying, but don't think there's some ex ante property transfer that there's like a transfer of right. But then he says, oh, but wait, doesn't the Gemara of Metzia say that Yad Poel Kiyad Balabayis, which implied some sort of Gufo Kanoi? He says, well, no, Ein Zestira, because Bisha Shehuose Kipoel Yado Kiyad Balabayis. Mikam Bakam Ein the Balabayis Kinyan Bo Kivan Shiyachal Aserbo. So there's a lot of interesting assumptions here in why he keeps insisting that the Poel is not a Kinyan. Not 100% persuasive, in my opinion. He also has some assumptions here about how the Zchus Chazara vitiates any idea of Kinyan. But in terms of our sugya here, he wants to resist the earlier answers that the Rishonim gave about when to apply Motzmei Chavero versus... Motzmei Chavero Dehailo Lahasnos versus the rule of Yayin Zes Finastam, and his answer is that you don't apply the motzi mechaver al varaya rule when there's a transfer of a property right. That holds in schiras metaltalin. You do apply it, and I think the reason is because there is no motzi. You do apply it in schiras poelim where there's no kinyan. You're paying for services provided, in which case, so long as the service is not provided, you're considered to be the motzi. All right, should we stop? Let's stop here. But we have just three important views about how to distinguish between the rule on Ayin Zayin and the rule on Ayin Tes. We'll pick up tomorrow. Let's read through this important Machne Ephraim that I added in the 11th hour. He's also trying to sort out the different rules and when each one applies. And then we'll just wrap up this sugya tomorrow. All right? Oh, yeah. So can we do one? Yoni wants to do 1:15 because he has a conflict in the morning. But let's see. Does 1:15 work for everyone? If not,
it doesn't work for me.
Okay. Yoni, when's the earliest?
I won't be here either way.
It only works for me at 1:15.
1:15. Okay, Donnie, does later in the day work for you? You could say no.
Thursday? No, yeah, I think later in the day does work. But
Cole,
if it's past 2:20.
Past 2:20 works or doesn't work?
Here.
Cole, where are you?
I have writing to do. I'm sorry.
You sound very sad about it.
Tablet is getting 1,800 words out of me, and I need tomorrow night.
All right. So either way, you're not going to be here tomorrow. But can we do after 2:20 for Donnie?
Down.
Does 3:00 work for Yoni?
Yeah, I can do any time after 11:30.
Donnie, does 3:00 work for you?
The 3:00 is fine for me.
Adam, does 3:00 work for you?
Sounds good.
Yakir, 3:00 worked for you?
3:00 should be good.
Does it work for Uri?
Yeah. We'll see.
He's flexible. Alright, just Yakir, find out if it works for Gabe, alright? Okay, so let's schedule for in exactly 24 hours, we'll reconvene. 24 hours and 4 minutes.
See you guys later.
Take care, everyone. Yashikov.
Everybody read that thing that I sent.